Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. Childhood sexual abuse has been in the news in recent years due to the need for greater understanding of how this trauma can affect people well into adulthood. What can be done for the adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse to help them cope with the stresses of everyday life and to cope with the enormous amount of unseen stress that it imposes on them from within? We're going to be talking about that today with Deborah Rose Wilson, who is a professor in the School of Nursing. We'll be right back in just a moment after these words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. Dr. Jason DeBacker, an assistant professor in the Department of Economics and Finance, is the co-author of a new report that shows income inequality in the United States is more permanent than it is subject to periodic fluctuations. The study that DeBacker and his four co-authors conducted is based on the federal tax returns of 34,000 households. MTSU has hired Amy Harden as the new development director for the College of Basic and Applied Sciences. A graduate of Western Kentucky, Harden will be responsible for securing private donations for the college. And MTSU biology professor Jeffrey L. Walk was awarded a visiting professorship for senior international scientists this spring at the Institute of Botany of the Chinese Academy of Sciences. For MTSU News at any time, go to MTSUnews.com.
Deborah, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This study that you did, it was published in the Journal of Psychiatric and Mental Health Nursing in 2012. And the idea was to try to find out if a stress management education program could help adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse with their coping skills. How did your interest in this subject evolve?
It's a delicate subject. It's something hard to bring up. I was not sexually abused as a child. I was a nurse, and I was a labor and delivery nurse for many years. And when I was a young nurse and just first into labor and delivery, I was sometimes surprised how women were really felt a lot of pain when they had a vaginal exam, which normally shouldn't hurt. And I spoke to a wise midwife about this, and I was confused, like, why are they experiencing so much pain? What's going to happen when they're really in labor? They're not going to be able to handle it. And this wise midwife said to me, they're not experiencing physical pain. And as a, you know, 20-some-year-old young nurse, it was like someone hit me with a baseball bat to make me see things a little bit more holistically. So I became really interested in it because women would have flashbacks to the childhood sexual abuse while they were delivering. You get the scenario, though.
Right.
You know, there's someone, people standing around them, they're exposed, they feel vulnerable, their body is doing things that they can't control. We're not surprised that it's going to have flashbacks.
Was the pain totally psychological in nature, or was there actually psychosomatic physical pain?
And that's why you can't differentiate anymore, because they're both the same. If you perceive pain, then your pain fibers are stimulated, even if there isn't a possible trigger. So even if it is a psychological trigger, the pain can still be real to that person. They're still feeling it, even though we might not be able to measure it or really understand where it's coming from. And that's what kind of led me into my whole field of a field called psychoneuroimmunology. My PhD is in that field, and it examines how our beliefs and our attitudes and prayer and our past experiences change our biology. For example, a woman who has breast cancer and she says, oh, I'm going to die of breast cancer. Everyone in my family died of breast cancer. Guess what's going to happen to her? She's going to die of breast cancer.
That sounds akin to it's the flip side of Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Thinking.
Exactly.
And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. And the biology listens. Cell changes because of changes in perception. So we can no longer have the mind and the body. They are one. They are constantly feeding on each other. And so in this field of psychoneuroimmunology, we know that women who get a good attitude about breast cancer, and I'm going to fight this, this isn't going to take me down, I'm going to be stronger for this, survive, become thrive because of the breast cancer, and actually become more of a person than they were before, transcend into a whole bunch of understanding about life that they never had before.
I can imagine, though, that most women get breast cancer when they are, in fact, women. This occurs when they are women, as opposed to teenagers or younger. When someone is confronted with sexual abuse when they are a child, when they don't even understand normal, healthy sexual relationships yet, let alone the perversion that is being thrust upon them, I can imagine that it would be even more, you know, cataclysmic and a defining event in their lives.
It is. And a really good analogy to that is, consider life experiences as water. And a child is like a glass of water. You put a little drop of bleach in, that's going to change the water. But as we're older, it's like a whole swimming pool full of water. And a little drop of bleach, where we develop resilience to it. It doesn't affect us as much. But adults, our children who are survivors, have different brain structure. Their brain actually changes and grows differently. When we look at them on something called a functional MRI, where we can actually live see what the brain is doing, they make decisions differently than people who were not abused. And that has a ripple effect on everything. The brain changes, the hypothalamus changes, and in effect, the immune system changes. Once your immune system is out of balance, you're vulnerable to anything that you're either predisposed to because of genetics or is in the environment waiting to grab on and you know, somehow be a parasite or a virus or a bacteria. So over a period of time, if the childhood sexual abuse isn't healed, then it becomes a huge physical problem, not just psychological.
How does one change the inner biology by approaching it from an outer psychological standpoint?
First, let me explain a little bit about what stress does to us. There are different kinds of stress. Acute stress. Acute stress would be something like, oh, speaking on the radio, something, taking an exam, doing something that is short-term, but it's usually a little invigorating. It doesn't usually overwhelm you. Then there's chronic stress, and that's continual, unrelenting stress. And the best example of that are family caregivers of Alzheimer's patients.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And actually, a few years ago, it was found that they were the most stressed population in the United States, family caregivers of Alzheimer's patients, which is, then the Alzheimer's organization started a whole bunch of support for stress management, financial management, everything else that they need as a response because they're so stressed. And you know, Aunt Betty, who's been looking after Uncle Fred as he got older and older in his Alzheimer's, by the time he's ready for a nursing home, she's exhausted. She hasn't been sleeping, which really has a huge impact on your immune system. He gets up in the night and turns on the stove, so she has fear constantly. By the time he's ready for a nursing home, she's probably got breast cancer and will probably die before he does. That's the physical manifestation of unrelenting stress. Now, the third kind of stress is called distant stress. And most commonly, people know this as PTSD. We didn't name it that for a lot of years, but we recognize that soldiers in World War I and World War II came back with this distant stress. And we call it distant because it happened long ago, and yet it still has an impact on them.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that you don't have to be a soldier who has served in the line of fire in order to have PTSD. People who are rape victims can suffer from PTSD, and childhood sexual abuse victims can suffer from PTSD.
Fits right in there. And it doesn't necessarily have to be sex. It can be another trauma early in childhood. I mean, but the important thing to know is that no matter what it is, if it isn't resolved, if it isn't healed, then you're going to have a lifetime of health consequences. There's going to be issues that arise from it. Now, what do I mean by healed? I mean, say, for example, if you were 7, and you were in a motor vehicle accident and you broke your leg, there'd be stories for years about how wasn't it cute at Christmas when you couldn't open up your presents because your leg was in a cast and you were in traction. But it's never discussed again if it's childhood sexual abuse. If it was revealed, it's dealt with and never discussed again, or it's never revealed, or it's revealed and not believed. What really needs to be happening is that it's revealed and then that child and their family go into counseling so they know how better to integrate that into part of who they are for their life. You may have heard of some people who were sexually abused or had trauma that dissociate. And that's what they talk about, a dissociative disorder or a dissociative identity disorder that happens a lot. Because when that happened to them, they bundled it up and they put that up in their psyche somewhere. And they didn't integrate that into who they were. They didn't really understand that person that was raped or sexually abused as a child isn't integrated into them as they're starting to date, as they get older. And what I find working with adult survivors is that they tend to come into, especially women, come into their wisdom about in their 30s, and then they start healing. But I've also worked with people who began healing right away, and they do not seem to have the lifelong consequences. So there's great advantage to getting help right away. But it's really important to know that healing is possible at any point in life.
We'll explore this subject more right after we take a quick break. This is MTSU on the Record.
The American Democracy Project is a nonprofit initiative which strives for greater voter registration and civic participation among young people at MTSU and at campuses nationwide. Through encouragement from professors and peers, young adults are shown the value of being more active citizens in their community, their state, and their nation. ADP seeks to nurture programs that raise the campus community's level of engagement with society. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Deborah Rose Wilson from the School of Nursing here at MTSU about childhood sexual abuse and helping the adult survivors of that malady cope as adults. So what are the ways of coping? What kind of coping skills can you offer them?
Well, one of the things, and the study that you're talking about, we use stress management. Stress management is a whole mirage of skills, and we teach it to groups of for example, the Rape and Sexual Abuse Center in Nashville. We go and teach them some basic skills so that they have a whole basket of things to choose from. But things like slowing your body down. When you're in a stressful situation, your sympathetic system is screaming, the fight or flight response is kicking in. And all those things that happen in the fight or flight response, such as your heart beats faster.
Your adrenaline level kicks up.
Your adrenaline level goes up. And at the same time, your sugar level goes up. Well, that's hard on your body if you're predestined to have diabetes. And we know that people who are stressed a lot have a whole bunch of physical problems, including digestion. Ulcers are well known for people who are highly stressed. Well, you felt that little thing in your stomach that happens when you're stressed. That's your digestive system shutting down, because when you're stressed, your body's assuming there's a saber-toothed tiger in the room, and your body's having this whole physical flight or flight response. And so there's no need to digest food right now. There's a saber-toothed tiger in the room. I've got to do more protective things. So like, for example, I can clot my blood better when I'm in the fight or flight mode. You have more platelets. You have a better sticky blood, so that if the saber-toothed tiger scratches you, you'll clot and still survive.
We are hardwired for this, dating back to our most primitive ancestors.
Exactly. And how many times, really, is there a saber-toothed tiger in your room? It doesn't happen anymore.
Not unless you're watching a Nashville Predator. But anyway.
But we have that same response, as if a saber-toothed tiger is in the room, when our boss comes in and says, I need to speak to you in my office right away. We'll have that same fight-or-flight response. And there's no point to clotting our blood or changing how we see, or because, of course, your eyes dilate and you see peripherally better, but you also can't think logically. You think instinctually. So that's why students who are really stressed before a test can't logically work through the questions, because they're thinking instinctually, and that doesn't work in academia.
Right.
So when people are stressed like that, the whole parasympathetic system's job is to get you back into balance. And it's the relaxation response. And if we can get people out of that stress mode, then they're going to actually have a better immune function, because the immune system also says, I'm stressed, there's a saber-toothed tiger in the room, I don't need to make NK cells right now. And NK cells are natural killer cells whose job it is to prevent cancer from developing in your body.
So for purposes of this study, what did you do?
We worked with, this is the second in a series of studies that we did. The first study we did, we had 35 adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse, and in two different groups, we took them through 4 weeks of stress management training. And in this training, we taught them things like relaxation techniques, yoga breathing, meditation, light hypnosis, guided imagery, progressive muscle relaxation, encouraged massage. We had the public service committee at MTSU, which I have to give a plug for, helps me a great deal with this public service that I do, because they give me things to take to the survivors, like candles, that they could light a candle and do some self-care and have a bath with bubbles. Those are the things that the public service committee helps provide, so I can provide that for the participants. And I continue to do these studies. So we looked at before and after how they coped, their ways of coping. It's a questionnaire, and they look at, do you run do you fight or do you just pay attention and then do nothing? And that's what we tend to see that adult survivors do. They're completely aware of the stress, but they're immobilized. Well, of course they are. That's what they learned to do immediately. And that's become a lifelong pattern. They just kind of, they're aware of it and they just choose not to do anything about it.
And how old were these adult survivors?
How old were they?
Yeah.
They were between 28 and 44 in that first study, and then a little tighter, narrow range in their 30s in the second study. Another thing that we checked was their immune system. We actually had them spit into a cup, and we checked their immunoglobulin IgA. I'm so proud to have spit in my freezer at home for that whole period of time. And we checked it for immunoglobulin IgA. And we found that 4 weeks of stress management was enough to boost up their immune system. So we're giving them new ways of coping, new ways of dealing it, so we take them out of their bad patterns of coping. You understand it when she's six and Uncle Fred's on top of her. She's going to go away in her mind. But we don't want that to become a coping mechanism for every stressor in her life. And that those kind of bad coping mechanisms that happen at the time continue throughout life. And we can train them to better cope with life and stress and let them feel a little bit more in control of the stressors in their life.
Now, just to be clear, you're not saying 4 weeks of stress management and it's over, they're okay. You're saying that just 4 weeks of stress management will boost their immune system and they can continue with the stress management ad infinitum.
And right now we're doing a longitudinal study to see what happens 10 years later, to see if there's still a lasting effect. And I have to say, these women are incredibly brave. I am humbled working with these women because I wasn't sexually abused as a child. I had loving parents, unconditionally loved by my siblings, 3 meals a day. I have no one to blame anything on but myself. So I'm incredibly humbled when I see these women come back. And I get emails and letters from them still, from classes that I did even 10 years ago with these groups, saying I am still employing those. I'm teaching other people. I'm making a difference because now I know how to cope with my stress. I can recognize it for what it is. And this isn't all these people have. They're also being in counseling. This is something that's added inclusive to counseling. But even when we adjusted for that, the immune system still improved dramatically.
We'll take another short break. We'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The annual Baseball and Literature and Culture Conference at MTSU welcomes scholars from all over the country to present papers on numerous baseball-related topics. Their research highlights the national pastime's impact on everything from race relations to the economy and the sport's depiction in poetry and novels. The conference has attracted all-stars and Hall of Famers, including Denny McClain and Ferguson Jenkins. For the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about childhood sexual abuse and how adult survivors of sexual abuse can cope with their stress with Dr. Deborah Rose Wilson of the MTSU School of Nursing. What about little boys and grown men who are survivors of sexual abuse?
It's something we don't talk about. Thank you so much for bringing it up. We have to realize that this is reported. 1 in 3 to 4 women are sexually abused as children. That's reported. You know how many go unreported. 1 in 4 to 1 in 5 boys. And they don't report it anywhere near as much because there's shame involved, especially if it's a homosexual situation and they're not homosexual themselves, so they feel shame. There's an incredible amount of guilt. There's shame because society doesn't want to hear about that. So there aren't as many resources for men. Of course, the Sexual Abuse Center in Nashville and the one here in Murfreesboro both work with women and men and recognize that the issues for men are very similar. They're still hypervigilant. They still have fear. They still have shame, and they have that secret that they had to carry. That secret was a huge burden for, doesn't matter what the gender was.
Do you think that perhaps a study should be done using all men the way that your study was done using all women?
I would. And actually, I had 2 men that attended for these studies, and I didn't include them in the statistics because it wasn't relevant statistically. But just 2 men came. Women tend to seek it out more and admit it in public more than men do. And I expect there were probably 20 men that had been invited who didn't come, who didn't want to be there in the group and be seen. So they're actually in greater need than women are.
Now, you mentioned that women come into their wisdom in their 30s, but their late teens and their 20s are prime years for dating and having sexual relationships with other people and finding out what a healthy relationship is, for all intents and purposes, with another adult human being. So what happens to them in their teens and their 20s, assuming that they had not gotten any counseling or are in denial, and they go into adult relationships with this kind of cloud hanging over them that isn't over other adults who are sexually active?
What happens frequently, they'll go one way or the other. Young women, most of the studies have been, again, done on one, young women, because they are available, they do come forward. We find that they tend to be more promiscuous. That makes sense because they were never allowed to say no. They don't know about personal body space. You know how when you get someone that gets a little close to you in line, you get a little uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Well, they don't have that. Those alarms go off. We learn that as children. They learn to allow people into their personal space. So for them to step into promiscuity seems natural. And or they could go the other way. They could have incredible fear of sex now and then almost not be able to enjoy sex in any way at all.
How does your approach to stress management for adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse differ from your approach to stress management for someone who has not had childhood sexual abuse?
Stress management techniques are still effective for both parties. I think with adult survivors, they need more choice. We who were not sexually abused might have, you know, be told to do something and it worked quite well. For adult survivors, they need to try many different things to find the things that work for them. In my experience, that's the difference. There are three ways to deal with stress. Let's say your mother-in-law is coming to visit for 2 weeks, okay? Mm-hmm. You have three options. You can solve the problem. You can call her and say, please don't come. This isn't a good time. I really prefer you don't come. Now, if you know my mother-in-law, that really isn't an option. Yeah. So that may not be an option for everyone. You may not be able to solve your problem. But can you change how you feel about the problem and think about the problem? So I might say, you know, it won't be so bad with my mother-in-law coming. I can take her to farmer's market. She wanted to do that. I can learn that family recipe. I'm changing how I feel about it so it's not as stressful. Or the third thing you can do is, if you know my mother-in-law, she's coming anyways and I can't change how I feel about it. What I might choose to do is instead is to change my biology. Stop the sympathetic system from kicking in and kick in the parasympathetic system that's relaxing you and getting you back into balance. And I can do those things with maybe just meditation or guided imagery or light hypnosis or listening to music, going for a massage. And as adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse, that's one thing that they may not ever be able to do is have a massage.
We'll be right back. We're going to take another quick break and we'll return with more on MTSU On the Record.
The Experiential Learning Scholars Program at MTSU gives students a chance to go outside the classroom and obtain hands-on experience in their chosen fields of study. They'll have the opportunity to give something back to the community through service learning as they gain acceptance for graduate study. Students should be able to select EXL-designated courses from major requirements and general studies requirements to complete the 16 to 18 hours of EXL coursework. For all of the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
And we're talking about childhood sexual abuse and the adult survivors thereof and how they can cope with stress with Dr. Deborah Rose Wilson of the MTSU School of Nursing. Is biofeedback of any use in helping adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse?
It is. Excellent question. Biofeedback is very effective because it is so concrete. They can see on the computer screen what body changes are happening to them, and it's encouraging, and it validates what they're doing, and they do better and better. So for adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse who are used to doing things outside their body, they're used to projecting it out and looking at it from that perspective, biofeedback's ideal because now it seems like the computer is doing the work, even though it's not, but they're getting the feedback from the computer.
You know a lot about holistic health strategies and remedies and what is being termed in the popular media alternative health strategies. And is the conventional medical profession becoming more accepting of holistic and alternative health remedies?
Well, stress management is still considered a complementary and alternative modality, where I think it should be a way of life. it can no longer be ignored. Since the National Institute of Health started NCAM, which is a National Center for Complementary Alternative Modalities or Medicine, there has been an incredible amount of research done by both in the United States and through the World Health Organization that shows us the effectiveness of mind-body techniques, the effectiveness of hypnosis. Hypnosis has been accepted by the American Medical Association since 1958. But they forgot about it because we had anesthesia that seemed a lot safer, and to patients, you didn't have to worry about them waking up.
The only way in which I know of that hypnosis is used commonly in medicine is in stop smoking clinics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't hear of it being used for people undergoing outpatient surgery or anything like that.
It isn't in the United States, but I'll tell you, it's in other countries it is. It is very common. For people who are comfortable with hypnosis and have a clinical hypnotherapist they're working with, or can do self-hypnosis, that they can have their root canals done without any anesthesia, that they can have biopsies done without any anesthesia, even surgery without anesthesia. And those are incredible benefits because we know that usually it's anesthesia that's the problem, not the surgery that gives you problems in the end.
I'll tell you why I ask this question. As the Affordable Care Act goes into effect, is what people can and cannot afford to do.
Mm-hmm.
I go get a massage once a month, but my insurance will not pay for it unless a doctor prescribes it for me. Mm-hmm. The health benefits of the massage are not acknowledged by the insurance industry unless a medical doctor tells them she has to have this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a shame.
I agree. So much, what you're doing is prevention. You're preventing health issues from coming by reducing your stress and also, you know, reducing some of the fascia and some of the muscles and stuff and getting that relaxation happening. You're doing preventative health care. I think far more money should be going into preventative health care. Of our health care dollar, we're only spending, it's under 10% that we're putting into prevention. Does that make any sense to anyone? Look at the issues of childhood obesity. That is a completely preventable issue. It's really difficult to treat when the kids are 18 and they're obese. We need to be treating it almost prenatally and teaching the parents that don't let it happen in the first place. And here's how, and here are the structures. I'm really proud of the initiative from the White House that's talking about and addressing childhood obesity, because this is the hugest problem, and no pun intended, the hugest problem that the United States healthcare is going to face in the next 50 years. We are the fattest nation in the world. This is completely off the topic, but
right.
It isn't off the topic, because a lot of this, of what I deal with in adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse, could have been prevented.
Well, adult survivors of child sexual abuse who do not have any sort of realization or self-actualization or treatment could very well take it out on themselves by becoming obese, by cutting themselves, by self-flagellation, by doing all kinds of things to hurt mm-hmm. themselves and that not even understand the reason why.
Yeah.
So there is a tie to this.
We
punish our bodies for things that other people did to us wrongly.
Yeah, exactly. Great insight.
Thank you, Dr. Deborah Rose Wilson. We appreciate you coming on MTSU On the Record.
Thank you for having me.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.